Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's a Friday edition of Zero Block 30, and today we have five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, in a very meta move, an Air Force leader who once published an essay about the importance of respecting subordinates, he was fired for, you're not going to believe this, folks, disrespecting his subordinates. Round number two, a Coast Guardsman in Alaska was charged in a murder of a fellow seaman, but he was just released from the brig thanks to a Snapchat video. Round number three, we are going to get
pop quiz. Surprise, I'm going to make you take the general science portion of the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, a.k.a. the ASVAB, and everyone listening can play along. Chaps, are you smarter than a boot?
I have a feeling that I'm not going to be. Round number four, Kate interviews Marine and NYPD intel veteran Chris Strom. He's the author of the book Brooklyn to Baghdad. After retiring from the force, he and his family moved south for a slower pace of life, and then he found himself once again in the most dangerous areas of Iraq. Round number five, the story of a troop who was wounded at war, but right outside the PX, like during a war, and they want to know if that's enough to get themselves a Purple Heart for a perk of parking closer than you normally would be able to. Boy, do I have some thoughts about that integrity violator. And all that is going to be brought to you by our good friends at Reebok. In honor of those who serve, Reebok and J.J. Watt introduced the JJ3 Valors. They're going to be dedicated to longtime stoolie James Grandpa Watt, who is a Korean War veteran who taught J.J. the meaning of hard work, dedication, and service. For every pair of the Reebok JJ3 Valors shoes that are sold on Reebok.com and any other Reebok retail store, Reebok's going to be donating $5 a pair up to $25,000 to the Honor Flight Network. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing veterans with honor and closure. They have a great mission where they bring all kinds of veterans to the monuments and things like that in Washington, D.C. So head to Reebok.com/CBT to shop the JJ3 Valors. Veterans and active duty military and first responders will also receive 30% off their purchase on Reebok.com through the website ID.me. Again, that's ID.me. Let's start the damn show. Crushed that ad week.
Nailed
this week.
It. I didn't want to speak too soon, but you nailed it. That was a beaut. That was a real peach.
Ew. All right, so it's another edition of Zero Block 30. We have myself, we have Kate, and young Brent is sitting in a bigger seat today because I'm so happy to announce, like, this is such a great thing for Khan to do. Like, a lot of you guys know, Khan's not full-time here at Barstool, so sometimes he goes away for other things because he has other business to take care of. This week, it's not business for him. It's not his other job or anything like that. He's going to his 20th graduation ceremony from West Point, which is just amazing. Hard to believe, 20 years ago, he graduated from college.
I know. I can't believe he's so old. You know,
I know.
He dresses younger. He looks younger, but
he's doing a great job. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like 50. A lot of people don't realize that. So.
Yeah. And I mean, people would say, hey, it's the middle of November. Why? Well, because he got held back. So it actually took him 4.5 years to graduate from West Point, which isn't something that he likes to talk about. So we're just going to move on and through it. But before we really do that, we have some corrections because we are a military podcast. All of you listening know that. But occasionally, we make a mistake. We don't know everything about everything, and we're big enough to admit it. Right, Kate?
Well, we also have the policy of, when we're not sure, saying, we're just going to speak as if we're the authority, which I really enjoy. But we're not always right. We had a segment last week where we talked about the TSA getting the authority to essentially become Duck Hunt, the video game on drones near the airport.
And that wasn't our term. That was a technical term, Duck Hunt, that they said.
Right. It was totally them. But we were saying, oh, man, how awesome to, like, makes you want to almost join the TSA so you can shoot down these drones next to the airport. What a cool thing. Well, somebody messaged me, a listener of ZBT, and said, They actually do have people who play duck hunt at the airport with actual ducks. A friend of mine shoots pellets at raptors, geese, seagulls at JFK Airport as a full-time job. He trolls around the airport perimeter with a pair of binoculars, a walkie-talkie, and captures the birds to keep them out of the airspace. So that's like an actual, she said most airports have it, and I'm sure with a little security check, Cons would be able to weasel his way in there. She knows Cons pretty well. She gets the vibe. But I didn't realize, of course, that must be a thing, bird control. So if you're looking for a job after you get out of the military and you're a good shot, my goodness, what a treat of a job that would be.
Also, side note, I don't believe that the animal kingdom is doing raptors any justice, because as soon as you said raptors, all I could think about was the dinosaur.
Raptors, yeah.
Yeah.
They move in herds.
Velociraptors have completely cucked the raptor name from all birds of prey, which I hate to see because, you know, I'm a huge bird guy. You're a big bird lady, too.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? I like every single bird account on Twitter and Instagram.
Do you believe that birds are like the closest descendant of dinosaurs? Have you ever heard about that?
No, I don't just believe it. It's a scientific fact.
It's cats, actually. That's why if you're still a dog, won't come at you. If you're still, a cat will come at you. No matter what, a cat will come for your ankles. Guess what animal does that? The Velociraptor. If you've seen Jurassic Park, you know that being still doesn't save you like the T-Rex.
All right, let's move into round one. Round number one, what do we got, Kate?
All right, first I'm going to read something real quick. And you guys, Chaps and Bren, you tell me if you think it's good advice. If you think it's good advice, I would like you to say an enthusiastic, aim high, fly, fight, win. And if not, if you think it's bad advice, I'd like you to say, Chair Force. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, all number right. one. We need more accountability from leaders shepherding new recruits through the service in order to turn them into effective leaders.
Aim high, fly, fight, win.
Yes. The frontline supervisor has two jobs, develop subordinates into professional airmen and develop these professional airmen to be great at their craft.
Aim high, fly, fight, win.
Give feedback often and set high achievable expectations. Hold airmen accountable to these expectations and apply appropriate corrective actions where and when they're needed.
Aim high, fly, fight, win.
And finally, if nobody is dying, then there's plenty of time to get both sides of the story.
Chair Force. Don't like that
Chair
one.
Chair Force.
Yeah. Well, these are quotes taken directly from Chief Master Sergeant Jason Morehouse, the command chief of the 20th Fighter Wing at Shaw Air Force Base, South Carolina. And going off your responses, it sounds like you agree with a lot of his leadership traits there. And that's from an essay that he wrote about respecting your subordinates, a.k.a. young boots. So why is this newsworthy? Because Morehouse, the gent who wrote that essay about respecting your subordinates, was removed from his position last month after his chain of command received evidence that he was disrespecting his subordinates. Colonel Derek O'Malley, 20th Fighter Wing commander, relieved the master sergeant from his position on October 2nd following allegations of unprofessional behavior. O'Malley received credible evidence that Morehouse was not treating others with professionalism, kindness, and respect, and this was confirmed by a subsequent command-directed investigation. Morehouse is not currently performing duties for the 20th and is awaiting reassignment, but sources didn't provide any other details. No extra tea was spilled. Wow. So a little hypocrisy.
See, now, there's no extra detail, so I'm not ready to go on and say that O'Malley did something right, because a lot of times I've been in Air Force commands, they take their kindness a little bit too far.
You think?
Definitely.
I was actually shocked when I saw that they kicked him out for not treating others with kindness was one of the words they used. And I was like, you would never see that in a Marine Corps.
Yeah, no. I mean, I got in trouble when I first got to the Air Force command here. There was, I believe it was a senior airman, so an E-4 in the Air Force, came up to me at the dog school with a dog on leash, like with the short safety on and everything, on this place called Shit Hill. And he came up to me, addressed me by the wrong rank. He was like, hey, Sergeant. And he was chewing gum and like just smacking his gum, walking around with his dog and everything. And I flipped out. I was like, you motherfucking piece of shit. And just started going off like I normally would and just screaming at this airman. Well, they brought me into the office and they're like, Staff Sergeant, you cannot do that here. You can't dress somebody down in front of public in front of everyone. I was like, what? what is this place? I'm getting in trouble because this nasty worm is fucking chewing gum and speaking to me like he shouldn't be.
Oh my goodness. So you would never have made it. You would probably go wrong
with chewing gum?
It's just nasty.
You can't do it in uniform. You can't be walking around chewing gum. It's like you can't walk and talk on your cell phone at the same time.
Or that's not use an umbrella, although that's changed.
Or that has changed. I don't want to get chaps all riled up. But I just thought it was funny that this guy and the headlines on like military.com were, it was just like, man who wrote thing about respecting subordinates fired for disrespecting subordinate. It was just kind of funny the way they. So I'm interested to know the real story. I mean, they did a whole command directed investigation, so I'm curious to know what they found.
And it's not fair because in the Air Force, you have to write like these essays whenever you're going up for promotion boards, like your philosophies on leadership. A lot of times that's a requirement. So they're taking this dude's like what he said and like turning it against him. And he might not have even be that mad now, or what he done might not even be that bad. We don't know. But if it comes back that he was being real fucked up, I'm going to take all that stuff back.
Yes.
But for right now, I'm on O'Malley's side because I don't imagine that he would say something super bad.
Fair enough. The final note on it just made me think of, I mean, leadership is such a huge thing. You have so many different leaders when you're in the military. And the hypocrisy of having a staff sergeant yell at me for ripping a cig before PT and then watching him crush a Red Bull and a cig like immediately after PT. Or like,
yeah.
I mean, it's so hard when you're a leader to walk the talk that you put out there. And so I think anybody listening who's in the military has like 1,000 examples of times a higher up told them, A, when they were doing something else.
Because you got to be tough. Like, if you're a senior enlisted leader, I think you have to be tough and hard-nosed. Like, that's your job and that's your responsibility. But now you do have to pussyfoot. I mean, because that, remember that Navy chief or the command master chief that got kicked off of his boat for saying stuff about strip clubs? There's a lot of pussyfooting going around in the Navy, and I don't like it. Navy, Air Force, Marines, and soldiers. I think everybody across the board, we're getting too politically correct in the military.
But I will say, sometimes it's a correction needed because people are going overboard with it and we're like way out of line, I think, for sure. And also, don't be like the guy from Britain we talked about, the British Army, a couple weeks ago, who was twisting people's nipples.
Yeah, see, that's when you step in. As a commander, that's when it's your responsibility to step in. But if you just get, like, say, the master sergeant, for instance, the master sergeant's called somebody a boot-ass bitch, I think that's fine.
Fair enough.
Yeah, let's move on to round two.
All right, moving on from the Air Force to the Coast Guard. We're mixing it up a little bit, getting away from our usual core stories. This comes to us from Andrew Dyer at the San Diego Union Tribune. And when I saw this story pop up, I wasn't sure what to expect. And it's quite the yarn, I have to tell you. So a Coast Guard seaman was accused of murder, but then he was released from a San Diego brig on Monday as the admiral overseeing his prosecution ordered a new hearing in the case. So this seaman, Ethan W. Tucker, he's 21 years old. He gets arrested in August after a Coast Guard investigation into the January death of seaman Ethan Kelch, age 19. And the two of these guys, they served on the same ship together, the Douglas Monroe, and based out of Kodiak, Alaska. So they're way up in the boonies. And Tucker gets charged with murder, involuntary manslaughter, aggravated assault, making false official statements, obstruction of justice, and failure to obey orders. He entered a plea. He has not entered a plea and says he won't do so unless his case is referred to a court martial. So initially, the Coast Guard accused Tucker of all that stuff and of using blunt force trauma to Kelch the night of January 26th. They say he dragged him into frigid water where he drowned, and his body was found on January 27th. However, evidence presented at Tucker's defense on October 16th cast the events of the night in a different light, and it's all thanks to Snapchat videos. So they're saying this guy, Tucker, dragged his buddy, Kelch, into the freezing water of Kodiak, Alaska in January, on a January night. So, like, beat him up and then dragged him into the water. Well, and he was actually, like, charged with this and put in the brig. So the only thing saving him now, a Snapchat video that has surfaced. It was posted by a witness who was there that night, and it shows the seaman's name is Trevin Hunter, and it shows Tucker trying to keep Kelch out of the water, not placing him in the water. The videos weren't shown in court, but according to testimony, Kelch often became belligerent and difficult to deal with when he drank too much. And Henderson said that the night Kelch died, Tucker fought him when Kelch tried to go for a swim in the waters off Aminac Island. So I can see, I've had so many nights with the Marines in the barracks where one of the Marines gets super, super hammered and wants to go. They get an idea in their mind. They want to go do something. And it takes the whole squad to keep them from doing it.
Oh, that's like, probably how that house that got flooded. Like, I'm going to drive home. Like, no, you're not. I'm going to do it.
Right. And eventually, after that,
a lot
Marine
of times
Corps
it ends
video.
Up happening. Yeah, no doubt.
For sure. We had a night in the barracks where we shared, we were fieldside MPs, but we shared a barracks with the PMO, the police MPs. Mm-hmm. And they would always get into fights with each other when they were drinking on a Friday night. It was like, oh, we're fieldside, we're tougher, and then like little PMO. So they get into this argument. The actual cops come, the military police who were like on duty come to the barracks, and a bunch of our Marines are getting like arrested in the hallway. And in my room, I pulled in one of the Marines who was walking by. I was just reading in my room that night because I was super cool like that. I pull in this young Lance Corporal that I see, and I'm like, "You?" He's like, "No, I got to go out there and be with my buddies. I got to go. If they're going, I'm going too."
I can't leave him, Corporal.
And I was like, "You stupid motherfucker." I had to put him in my closet and sit against the door to keep him from going out and getting arrested.
Kate's breaking barracks orders, having a male in her room with the door shut.
I did. It was scandalous. And I was in my pajamas. So spicy. But I think, again, anybody listening has, like, you know, those super drunk nights. And back then, we weren't, like, sipping beers by the thing. You're, like, passing up. We were hard liquor people. We were not fucking around.
Crushing alcohol.
So I can absolutely see this group of young Coast Guardsmen. They're passing this bottle of liquor around, and one of them's like, I'm jumping in the water in January for a laugh. And like his buddy,
and you have written here how cold it is, because in the Kodiak, right, the water can be 40 degrees. The average air temperature at that time is 36 degrees. So you can get hypothermia in 30 minutes or less in that condition. I would bet you could get it even faster than 30 minutes just by jumping in that frigid-ass water. It'd be terrible. And also, the person fucking recording the Snapchat, what are you doing, dude?
Right. Go what are help. You doing? But so Henderson said that night, the three men, so the one who videoed it and then the other two who got in the fight, they had downed a bottle of R&R Reserve whiskey, a whole entire bottle of it. So Tucker fought to keep Kelch out of the water for about half an hour while
they're
all.
That's not that much. A
they're
fifth
all blacked
between
out drunk.
Three people? Yeah.
It's not a fifth. It says a bottle, a whole bottle of R&R whiskey. But Tucker fought to keep Henderson out of the water for about half an hour. Before Tucker collapsed, exhausted and intoxicated. And when you're really fighting somebody, it's exhausting. If you're doing it for 30 minutes, blacked out drunk, yeah. So Tucker, the next day, they found him 200 yards down the beach, passed out on the beach. It's amazing he didn't die of exposure as well. And his buddy also in the water, obviously they found his body.
So where was this Hunter guy? The guy that was filming just left his buddy, both of them, on the water?
That's a great question. When three people are super blacked out drunk, who knows? It's like three Yetis running through the woods. You have no idea who's going to end up where. So testimony by the Alaska medical examiner who performed Kelch's autopsy also contradicted the government's narrative that put the other guy in the brig at first. They testified over the phone that none of Kelch's head injuries were fatal and that he died by drowning. That was enough to send Tucker's case back to prosecutors. A new hearing is scheduled for December 3rd, and the new charges eliminate the blunt force trauma to Kelch's head, and that Tucker struck the victim unlawfully. Just a crazy... This guy was going to be in jail for... He was already in the brig. It looked like all the charges, he was going to get charged
for murder, yeah.
For murder. And now this video surfaces and exonerates him. This old Snapchat video that somebody saved. That's crazy to me.
And it's crazy that it took so long for the defense to, like, present that, too. Like, that should be, like, the first thing that you do. Like, we had this video of me actually not to do it, and in fact I'm trying to save his life.
Right, they were buddies. His friend dies. They were all very stupid in this story, which I'm sorry that Kelch passed away, but
person.
What's 30 that
minutes 30 minutes of dealing with somebody that drunk that wants to jump into the essentially Arctic Ocean would be terrible.
Oh my God. I was like the mom of my, once I became an NCO, I became like the mother hen of the barracks and the guys. And every weekend I feel like I was keeping somebody from doing something absolutely moronic and like physically holding people back and forcing them like, oh my God. So I can only imagine what this scene was like, but pretty crazy.
What a guy too, to spend half an hour trying, but he knew he was saving his life. He knew like, if you go in this water, you will die. Like,
and
you will
I can
either
imagine
freeze
that
or drown.
Water at that time of year is exactly calm waters too. It's not like you're right. going to Montego Bay. Like the right. waters off of Alaska are pretty rough.
No, it's crazy. That whole story, I just thought, you know, a little Snapchat video, it just seemed like really that guy's whole life has changed because of that, a couple few seconds on that. So keep that in mind when you're out there Snapchatting.
And also, like, we're trying not to make light of the dude who died. Like, everybody's right. gotten drunk and passed out and done right. this stupid shit. Hate to see somebody died that way that was defending the country. It's fucking terrible.
Yes.
Let's move on to round number three, which today is going to be presented to you by our good friends at the Calm app. Kate, have you tried the Calm app?
I have. Yes, I have dabbled around on there, and it is very helpful to me.
It is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're struggling to sleep, you're not alone. 1 in 3 U.S. adults doesn't get enough sleep, including, I think, probably everybody who's ever served in any way. I think that that is a huge misnomer for veterans. It's like whenever you get out, when you're in, I think you can sleep anywhere at any time, right? Would you agree? Like whenever you were in the Marine Corps, could you sleep in the sand, up against a tire, like in like the back of a vehicle? No matter what, you could fall asleep wherever you're at.
People say that, and a lot of times I could, only if we were getting like a PowerPoint or something. I've never had more powerful inclination to sleep in my life. Like I could fall asleep right there at the table.
Oh, but if there's a PowerPoint, I was always bobbing for cock, big time.
Oh, forget about it. Super yeah. easy. But yeah, no, but not always so easy. The whole flight to Afghanistan my first time, which is like 7 long-ass flights, I was wired. I was like wide awake. I could have used the Calm app to calm me down a little bit. So,
and that's exactly why we're partnering with Calm, because they're the number one sleep app. The sleep deficiency does some serious damage, not just to your brain, but to your body as well. The sleeplessness, and if you're sleepless, you're more prone to accidents, weight gain, and depression. With Calm, you'll discover a whole library of programs designed to get you to sleep, and your brain and your body needs that sleep like soundscapes. Over 100 sleep stories narrated by soothing voices like Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones and Stephen Fry. So if you want to seize the day, sleep with the night, get the help of Calm. And right now, ZBT listeners get 25% off of a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/ZBT. That's calm.com/ZBT. 40 million people have downloaded it, and find out why at calm.com/ZBT.
All right, round number three. When I was in high school, I had not considered the military. I knew I was going to college, whatever. It wasn't until later that I ended up joining. But I remember hearing an announcement over the loudspeaker, like, I feel like all the time it stuck out in my head, that the ASVAB, the lady announcing that where the ASVAB was going to be given, and in this auditorium at this time, and blah, blah. And I was always like, what the hell is that? Well, it is the aptitude test that measures your strengths, weaknesses, and potential for future success in the military. And it also gives career information, like those tests, like, what am I going to be when I grow up? It kind of covers that. And it covers general science, math, word knowledge, paragraph comprehension, arithmetic reasoning, electronics information, automotive and shop info, mechanical comprehension, and assembling objects. So, like, obviously, if you suck at the word knowledge, but you're really, really good at mechanical comprehension and assembling objects, maybe Motor T or something is for you. Who knows? Whatever. But it helps.
I remember sitting down and taking this test and getting to the automotive and mechanical parts, being like, what in the fuck are they even talking about, dude?
Because right.
my brain just does not work in that way. Like, if I open up a hood of a car and I look inside, I might know what, like, 3 of the parts are. I'm like, that's
exactly.
the oil stick. Like, I see that little belt right there, and that thing back there is supposed to do something. I'm supposed to add oil to that. Other than I think it's wizardry.
Big dick energy when I put new windshield wiper fluid in. I'm like, everybody look at me. I'm a mechanic.
Virginia for getting that for you every year.
Indeed, they do, right next to my stocking by the tree. There's all different kinds of intelligence. This test, the ASVAB, kind of figures out what your brand of intelligence is, where your strengths are, and then it helps place you in the military. And the different service branches, it's out of 100. The required score to get into the different branches out of 100, Army, you need to get a 31, Navy, a 35, Marines, a 32, Air Force, 36, Coast Guard, Smarty Pants, 45.
They have the hardest to get in, and I can see why. A lot of the stuff they do is complicated.
So it's really difficult, but Chaps, I wanted to know, do you remember what your score was?
Yeah, I think I got a 76.
Yeah, a lot of people, like, back when you're in, oh, what'd you get? Oh, I got an 82. Whoa. Like, it was a thing people kind of, like, big dick energied on each other with what they got on the ASVAB. Yeah. But I served with people that I loved who got, like, barely scraped by in the Marines with a 33, and they were a goddamn delight. So, hey, whatever. Some people aren't test takers.
But some of them got, like, a 33, and they are stupid.
Stupid as fuck. Anyways, I wanted to see if, since the years have passed, if you're still as smart, if you could still get something similar. So
I'm actually really nervous about this because I think an aptitude test, I mean, I'm fucking 37 years old at this point. All, like, any type of high school knowledge, that shit is way gone out of my brain. When I try to help my older daughter with any type of homework, I'm like, I don't know what this means, honey, at all. I don't know what this means. You want some engagements on your tweets? Come see daddy. Other than that, go talk to mom.
Other than that, that's it. I put one on the Zero Blog 30 Instagram story yesterday with 10 word knowledge questions, and people were messaging me like, I only got one right. I have a PhD. I'm like, I know, man. Wow. It's tough, dude. So I wanted to give you...
For the record, I got 8 out of 10 on that one.
Yes, Bren did get 8 out of 10. Smarty Pants McGillicuddy.
You're going to have to show your work on that, Bren.
Yeah, we
I
don't
took my
you.
Screenshots and sent them to you.
Both him and Cons, both him and Cons messaged our own Zero Block 30 account. We're like, look how good I did. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Anyways, course Connor did.
So, Chaps, let's get into it. First, my theme song. Are you smarter than a brand new boot? Cause there's gonna be a test for you. Gunny, gunny, now we're back in drill. Are you smarter than you used to be? Are you smarter than a brand new boot? Grab a glow belt and you go faster. Gunny, gunny, now we're back in school. So are you smart enough to rock the ASVAB? Ow! Bren, Chaps, Zero Blog 30 listeners, question number one in the general science portion of the ASVAB. And these are actual questions that you would find on the ASVAB.
Yep, ready.
Question number one. When did the space shuttle first fly? 1970, 1965, 1981, 1990?
1965.
Are you guys cheating?
No.
No, we're just smart.
Okay.
I mean, that was it was right after Kennedy was there. Kennedy said that he wanted to go to the moon, and so it was soon thereafter Kennedy was elected president in 1960.
Sheesh, wow.
I would say I probably would not have gotten that one right if there were multiple 1960s answers. I knew it was the 60s.
Wow, my goodness.
If you had to ask me the specific year, I probably wouldn't get that one.
All right, question number two. Good luck with this one, idiots. Who invented the telescope? Hans Lippershey? Zacharias Janssen? Henry David Thoreau? Henry Cavendish?
Say those again.
Hans Lippershey, Zacharias Janssen, Henry David Thoreau, Henry Cavendish.
I'm going to say A.
I'm going to go, because I feel like Henry David Thoreau was, he was like a poet, I feel like.
Yeah, he's a writer.
So definitely wasn't him. The four.
Wrong. You're both wrong. You're both big,
bitch.
Dumb idiots.
Damn.
Not you, just in general.
Just in general. All right. How long, Chaps, this is especially pertinent to you. Question number three. How long is your small intestine? 22 feet? 50 feet? 10 feet? 1 foot?
22 feet.
Bren?
50 feet.
50 feet. Chaps, you're wrong. Bren, you are right. Which is not found in a cell? Cytoplasm, cell membrane, metatarsal, nucleus?
Metatarsal.
Metatarsal.
Yes, correct. Which element is necessary in the formation of rust? Hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur?
Oxygen.
Sulfur.
Ooh, Chaps, yes. Bren, no. Idiot. In degrees Celsius, at what point does pure water freeze? 32. 220.
Zero.
Bren? It is 32 degrees. You guys are both stupid.
You got to wait for all the answers because that's going to affect my answers.
32 degrees Celsius?
32 degrees.
Yeah, Celsius. You're thinking Fahrenheit.
Yes.
No, oh, 32 is the freezing point for Fahrenheit. Zero is the freezing point for Celsius. Yeah. You wrote that down wrong. I'm 100% right on that.
You know what? In hindsight, maybe I copied my own answers down here. No, I know I did this right. 32 degrees Celsius is when water freezes.
32 degrees Celsius is like 96 degrees.
32 degrees. Oh, my God.
Do we have to call into question the other answers? Do we get? No, well, not all of them. I know some of them were definitely right.
It turns out that I am not smarter than a boot. I have done the ultimate boot move of doing this completely
32 degrees
wrong.
Fahrenheit for sure. And then, yeah, it must be 0 degrees
it's
Celsius.
0 degrees. Oh, my God. Because the boiling point is 100 degrees.
Well, boy, is this embarrassing. It looks like you two have fared better than I.
Well, no, that's the melting point is 0 degrees is what this says.
In Celsius, at what point does pure water freeze?
What's the right answer?
Well, I have 32 degrees.
It's 0 degrees is the freezing point.
Yeah. No, it's the melting point.
Oh, my God.
Melting
We're
point,
never
if it goes
get into
over
the Coast
zero,
Guard.
Things begin to melt because they're no longer at the freezing point.
Are melting point and freezing point the same thing?
32.1 or 0.1 would be the melting point. Zero is the freezing point.
Anyways,
this is a great podcast.
Thanks for listening. Are you smarter than a brand new boot? Because there's gonna
Was that
be
the last
a test
question?
For you. No, there's more, but I fucked it up, so we can't go on.
No, let's keep going.
Oh,
no,
you okay, keep going. All right.
Well, are they going to be the right answers? Do you have the
no,
right?
No, I don't. I accidentally copied over the answers I gave.
Oh, my God.
So even the ones I said that were right and wrong before, I have no idea if they were or not.
They should be right, but those are the ones that you also got right?
I don't know anymore.
Couldn't have gotten all of
What's
them wrong.
The chemical abbreviation for table salt? NaCl, SCl, SoCl, H2O.
Say it again.
Chemical Kate's abbreviation so for table salt. NaCl.
NaCl is right.
Yeah, Bren. NaCl, Na is sodium.
All right. Sound waves travel faster in room temperature air, space, steel, water.
I'm going to say steel.
What were the questions again?
Sound waves travel faster in room temperature air, space, steel, or water?
Room temperature air.
I don't know. I put space in
my mind. All right, let's move on to round number four.
We're not smarter than a new boo.
You leave a corporal to do one thing. Unbelievable.
You fucking lunch corporal.
So it was out of 16 questions.
Staff Sergeant says approved. Not as hard on the wrong test key.
Oh, wait. Oh, here. So I did fuck it up. It's too late now, but I found the correct answers.
Okay, so what's it? Did we get them right?
Okay. Real quick.
So if you got the right answers, then keep asking the questions, and we'll go back and reference.
When did the space shuttle first fly? 1981. Who? Who invented the telescope and slipper sheet? How long is your small intestine? 22 feet.
Oh, fuck.
Yes. Fuck you, Bren.
Which is not found in a cell? Metatarsal, element necessary for rust, oxygen. In Celsius, it's 0 degrees that water freezes. Steel, sound waves travel faster in steel.
Nailed it.
NaCl is the salt and the rest. How many bones are in the human body? Do you guys know?
216.
206.
Damn.
Oh, Bren, you just slipped down to
but
Navy.
But are they not multiple choice questions?
They are. But
I
do not even mean the fucking
faster.
Choices.
I fucking put Bren in a body bag. Wow. The only ones I missed was a space shuttle.
Well, anyways, in the original test, I only got 50% of 16 questions right, and I was giving you guys my answers in the beginning instead of the correct ones, which were at the bottom of the sheet that I did not scroll down to. So,
Katie Motor T.
Oh, Katie Motor, oh, Katie Fuel Bubba over here. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Okay, so, what's your new MOS? I'm the one who cleans out the water buffaloes.
The Marine Corps retroactively takes back my MOS. They're like, yeah, no, you're done. Anyways, thanks everybody who listened to that. That was Are You Smarter Than a Boot? General Science as fast.
Honestly, that completely backfired. I think Kate did that to make us look stupid. She's the one that came out looking the worst in the whole segment. Oh,
I did.
Love it.
Oh,
actually, Khan's got a zero.
Khan's got a zero.
Khan's did get a zero.
Yeah, because if you're not here, you fail.
They don't teach science at West Point anyway. That's like a wizardry school. No. So they don't dabble in that.
Oh, what's science? Oh, we just do gun stuff. Oh, right. We run around and do obstacle courses.
I play football. Right. Okay.
Feel me.
Okay. Let's move on to round number four.
Let's get ready to play Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
I'll take social studies.
Who puts gifts under the tree every Christmas?
Santa Claus.
Dave.
Your parents, stupid.
That's correct.
Let's try geography.
Where did your dog go when he got old?
My mom said that he went to live on a farm.
Dave.
That dog is dead.
Biology?
Biology, all right. Does a female orgasm exist?
I have no idea. I'm 11.
Dave?
It does not exist?
Yep. Just ask my wife.
Looks like I'm smarter than a fifth grader.
What? My mommy?
Oh, it's cool, man. Don't worry. I got your mom right here.
At least figure out the orgasm thing for her.
Round number four is our interview with Chris Strom. He's going to talk about his book and all kinds of other things. He sat down with Kate for a little while. You're going to enjoy it. Here it is.
Help, 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 right, help. Left, right, left.
All right, now on Zero Block 30, I am joined by Chris Strom, fellow Marine, author, and a retired NYPD sergeant.
Yes.
You were a sergeant in the... Yes. And somehow all those things ended up weaving together, and now you have written a book about... 10 years ago, you were on the Phoenix?
The Phoenix team, yes.
The Phoenix team, yes. Where you wound up back in Iraq using the skills that you learned in the NYPD after you got out of the Marine Corps. You wind up in Iraq using it for interrogation and everything like that. It's a really interesting story. The book is called Brooklyn to Baghdad, an NYPD intelligence cop fights terror in Iraq. But it's really interesting. It kind of took you full circle. You joined the Marine Corps 5 days after you turned 17 years old here in New York.
That's correct.
How did that?
Well, I didn't have the best home life, and mm-hmm. I'm not trying to feel sorry for myself. You know, there's a lot of other people that had, you know, difficult upbringings. But the house that I was living in was basically, it was falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two choices. I either could have just stayed there and watch it deteriorate even further, or I could have, you know, done something positive with my life, and thank God I joined the Marine Corps because it really changed my life, and it straightened me out, and it kept me from getting into trouble because I would eventually have gotten into trouble. There's no question about it.
So you join, and it's your first time really, like, going out into the world. You got to travel. You were stationed all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
You were. And so then after you get out, you move to Texas. You become a police officer in Plano, right? I didn't see that coming. I know. But then a couple years later, you come back to New York, you become an NYPD police officer.
Yes.
What was the impetus for that?
The department I worked for in Plano was a great department, very modern. It was small at the time. I think there was only about 120 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the midnight shift, and basically there was a huge expanse of property in Plano back then in 1985. It's not what it is today. And I said, I don't know if I could do this for 20 years.
Right.
I mean, you know, answering an alarm call every time there was a storm.
Loose cow.
You know, right. You know, writing speeding tickets. I was like, there's got to be more to life. And there were other units within the department, but I knew that the lateral movement into that was going to take years, five to 10 years. And I said, I got frustrated with it. I said, no. So I was already on the list for the NYPDD to get in. And I came back up and I called my old investigative officer from the applicant investigation. And I said, you know, what would it take to restart this or has it expired? And he says, I can get you in the next class.
Mm-hmm.
So within 3 months of coming up, I was coming up actually for a family occasion. Somebody was getting married. And I started the whole process all over again. And then I was in the January class of 1987. So
next thing you know, you're back here in New
York.
I'm back
here going to an academy all over again.
All over again. Yet another. You're an academy pro at this point.
Yes.
So you go through. You're working in New York City. Was it before or after September 11th that you got into the interrogation end of this job?
Pretty much. I was doing interrogations on the criminal side.
Mm-hmm.
Both as a cop and then afterwards I became a sergeant. But then 9/11 happened, and now I actually almost in a roundabout way get drafted into the intelligence division because I was already working in a narcotics unit.
Right.
And I really didn't want to leave because I had a great team, great guys and girls, and we were running around like lunatics, locking a lot of people up and doing search warrants, the things that you would see
right.
on TV. And I said, how could it get any better than this? I'm getting paid overtime. I make my own hours. I'm off Sunday and Monday, which are the ideal times to be off if you're an NYPD cop.
And you got to work independently a lot, and, doing your own missions.
Yeah, and I basically just said,
right.
let's go. And we went, and we just targeted problem areas that were drug infested. And, you know, because of that, you know, we ended up making a lot of drug seizures, but also a lot of handgun seizures as well.
Right.
So, and I didn't want to go. So then I made that a long story. We were doing interrogations there, obviously, to get search warrants and things like that, but primarily on the criminal side. That's what the search warrants were based on, you know, people selling drugs, people
right.
selling guns. In the intelligence division, it's totally different. It's more on a human intelligence collection. So it's less arrests, less smashing down of doors, less search warrants, but more detailed investigations and how to apply the Patriot Act, how to apply your mind and go, get around and use other assets to, mm-hmm. you know, infiltrate these people, introduce sources, undercovers, things like that.
You include a lot of that in the back of the book, like the things that you learn, like the key points of learning to interrogate people. I'm horrible at it.
Oh.
So a couple questions to see.
Okay.
Did I wash my hair this week?
Did you wash your hair this week?
Yes.
I don't know. When's the last time you washed your hair if it wasn't last week?
I didn't wash my hair this week. Sold. And then I was going to see if you could help me figure out who broke into my 2003 Honda CR-V last month.
I don't know if I can.
After this episode, it's too late. You're already here. I'm going to take you back out to Queens. We'll figure it out. But so you're doing that. You're really getting your feet wet more and more. You started kind of in figuring out like drug dealers and stuff like that. And then it became more broad, especially after September 11th.
Yes.
So when on earth did the government come in and say, when did you get recruited?
Well, the way that all happened, I had moved to Roanoke, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought was I was going to be involved in a construction business down there. And
so this is after. So now you've retired from the NYPD.
Yeah. And, you know, and when I was working in the intelligence division, again, I didn't think I would like the job. Turned out to be the best career decision I almost didn't make.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with some amazing people. And I learned a lot from some of these people. Some people that are I'm still very close with to this day that are gifted, seasoned investigators. People that actually mentored me, which is really the way it should be.
Right.
And so doing all that, you know, my average day would start sometime around 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning, and I didn't get home most of the time until like 11:30, which
right.
I was happy, and they were compensating me for it. I had a take-home car, overtime, and again, another phenomenal crew that made me look like a superstar.
But also, you're married with children at
right.
this point, and
right.
you're right. There's,
right.
there's a give-take. So you do this time in the NYPD, and then you retire, you say,
right.
going to slow down the pace a little bit,
exactly.
take it easy, you move
right.
to, okay, so now.
But the problem is that once you become somebody that, you know, is so involved and you get that adrenaline rush of, you know, hunting the bad guy. That's
mm-hmm.
the only way I can describe it. When you stop doing that, everything else is very ordinary.
Right.
And it's very sedate. And I was just like, I'm going to lose my mind. So fast forward, I get involved in this construction business. The business relationship that I was involved with this person didn't last very long. So
mm-hmm.
now I'm unemployed.
Right.
And I'm in Virginia, and I have my kids and my wife and mortgages and things like what everybody else has. And, excuse me, I put in an application for this one company, and I'm actually in the basement painting,
mm-hmm.
which I hate painting.
Right.
But it's like I got to make use of my time.
Keep
I'm going out
busy.
Of my mind. I got to do something.
Yep.
You know. So the phone rings, and I pick up the phone, and it was this gentleman from MPRI L3 Communications says, hey, are you still interested in that job? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. Which job is this? Because I had filled out quite a few applications.
Right.
And he described the job, and I said, I'm in.
And that was?
So I get into this, I guess it's like an onboarding process with about 25, 30 other guys in this room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a two-week, counterterrorism training 101, which was kind of like, okay, all right, been there, done that.
Right.
But I'm like, I get it. Everybody's got to move at the same pace. And they pick me and two other guys, and they pull us out of the room, and they bring us to another room, and they
mm-hmm.
say, look, we got this other project, which became the Phoenix Project. And
mm-hmm.
we don't know if you guys are as good as your resumes are, or if you're all full of shit. Uh-huh. But we would love for you guys to do this program if you're up for it. So I'm like, I'm in. So now I go from where I'm just going to be basically an advisor to somebody in theater, in country, mm-hmm. to I'm going to be out in the field grabbing
boots
these
on the ground, outside the wire, in Iraq.
Combat missions in Iraq, armed, wearing identical uniforms as the Army, and grabbing these people at 3 o'clock in the morning out of their bed.
And this book details that. Brooklyn to Baghdad is the book. And going through it, I mean, you have photographs, you have, and you were kind of on the lead edge of, I mean, interrogation was such a huge part of figuring out, especially in the areas with high IED, like, and you were on a team working with that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we were
like,
breaking down the cells. Right. We were actually the tip of the spear breaking down the cells, one by one.
And
one
so
by one.
How, I mean, what did your family, I have to wonder, you moved down there for a slower pace
I
of
know,
life.
I know.
You're
I
painting
know.
In the basement. You get a phone call. Next thing you know, you're on this Phoenix team, and you're going to Iraq outside yeah. the wire. Yeah. What did your wife say?
Well, you know, the thing with my wife, first of all, my wife, I'm married 25 years.
Yeah.
So I've got the best wife mm-hmm. who has always supported me. And she's, you know, just like similarly with people in the military, you have like military wives and you have cop wives. Well, my wife's now gotten to see both of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not the true military, but essentially the same thing, deployment and things like that. Totally supportive.
Right.
She's like, if she was in here, she would tell you, mm-hmm. this is what you're good at. This is what you do.
Right.
And I'm like, I love it. I mean, when you're actually there, it's just you and this other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mental game and it's a challenge. And, you know, yes, they speak a different language.
Right.
But body language, physiology, facial expression, it's all the same. It's just a different, it's just
some things are just universal.
It's the human condition. You can't change it.
So they pull you out of the room. They bring you into this Phoenix team. I'm saying mm-hmm. that right. And so you train, I'm guessing, for a bit of time, and then
yes.
they send you over.
Right.
Was it the team? Was it you were split into small groups and sent out amongst? How did that work?
Well, the teams, pretty much whenever we went out, just so you have a better idea of it, we had organic army, mm-hmm. Real green suiters,
okay.
army soldiers, as our drivers, but they were assigned to us. The team itself consisted of me and a dog handler, a technical exploitation officer, search teams, who else? EOD, mm-hmm. and we were all a self-contained unit. So we would go probably anywhere, depending on how many dogs we had with us, probably about 7 to 8 people deep as a team, not counting the drivers. Of course, the drivers, each vehicle has 3, so it's got a driver, a radio person, and a guy up in the cupola on the 50 cal.
Right.
So those would usually go out in either 2 or 3 vehicle convoys of our own in support of another Army unit
right.
that was actually actioning the target. They wanted us there to do the actioning with them.
Okay.
So once we got out on the X and we located where this person was, then we would get out. We would wait for the, okay, ready, entry, you know, the dogs, we would go in, do the sweep and all that.
Yep.
And then it's like, okay, game on. Let's go. Where's this scumbag?
Right.
I need to talk to him. And I need a place that's not with everybody around me so I could really hone in on this guy and work him over mentally.
And that sounds, you know, it sounds like a movie. It sounds bad. But also in the book you detail, it's not as straightforward as that. There's all sorts of rules and regulations and all sorts of things that you have to be cognizant of as you're doing it. And there's probably a ton, I'm guessing, this is a process that it's a lot of trial and error and learn as you go.
Oh, yeah.
Were some of the biggest things? Do you have an example of, I learned a big lesson on this one, or something that really sticks out as a key moment?
Well, the interrogation is interrogation. Again, that the principles of that and the learning curve for that, for me, I already had a good solid foundation on that.
Mm-hmm.
Although now I'm working with a translator, so there's a little bit of that. Some of the challenges are with the translators themselves, because I would want to say something, and it might not be a nice way to say it.
Right.
And they would hesitate, and they were like, I don't really want to say that.
Right.
In front of this person,
mm-hmm.
assuming that this person can't speak English, which probably, I would say, more did speak English than did not, and some were fluent in English.
Mm-hmm.
But I always went on the premise that they, you know, knowing that in the back of my mind, I never came out of character.
Right.
So that was one of the bigger challenges.
Yeah.
Having an interpreter who could mirror your inflection, your tone, and your level of intensity without, you know, without you know, thinking that he's the interrogator.
Right.
Which sometimes becomes the case when you're over there.
And you, because you think you're getting a specific message across, and who knows, a couple words change, right. a couple tones
exactly.
change, and it's like definitely not
exactly.
what you thought you were saying.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what are some of the most, because I mean, you, in looking at the photos and everything, you also experience, you're working hand in hand with these soldiers, and you see the bad things that are happening to them because of the enemy. I'm sure that fuels, puts a fire under your ass.
Oh, forget it.
And there's a lot of emotion and things involved. What was one of the biggest finds that you're most proud of? That,
well, we were targeting this one particular cell, and the members of the cell were directly related to MENSA, the Ministry of National Security and Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So when they actually decided to stand up a government, they brought back Nouri al-Maliki.
Mm-hmm.
Who had been in exile for like 13 years. And now the country, albeit for better or worse, which was Sunni, is now under Shia control. And this guy is not a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's installed all his asshole friends in his ministry. And because of that, now they're exacting a pound of flesh out on the Sunnis.
Right.
And they're really taking it to them. So this particular cell was taking people that were Sunnis, just the civilian population, displacing them, and then re-renting them their homes or their furniture or whatever. And we started finding people every time we would find another member of the cell, it was going back to this ministry.
Right.
So we wanted to, actually, at one point, we had taken down about probably four or five directly related, official ID cards and everything.
Yeah.
And we wanted to take down and do a search warrant and get all these court records. And we were on plan for it. We planned it for about a month. And then the next thing you know, they pull the plug.
Hmm.
And they decide they're not going to let us do this. Now, do I know 100% why they shut the mission down? Of course I don't know 100% why. Do I believe it was shut down because it was going to be very embarrassing to the U.S. government? 100%.
Because we were backing these guys,
and they
were being incredibly corrupt.
And they were killing their own people. And we were watching it.
Right.
We were watching it.
Right.
It wasn't like our imagination. There was torture houses and everything.
Right.
And we just... We knew that these people, and
there's
no
nothing you can do.
No, nothing.
And there's
no,
really nothing you can do.
No. And moreover, in these houses where these bad guys were that were directly tied to the Ministry of National Security and Affairs, MENSA,
mm-hmm.
There was tens of thousands of dollars that was being confiscated on their properties.
Right.
In $100 sequential U.S. $100 bills. So one thing's for certain is they didn't steal the money.
Right.
Somebody gave it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you get a lot of money, and, you know, one lot is serial numbers 1 through 10 and the other one is 11 through 20, you could easily find out where that's coming from.
You can trace it.
You can easily trace, but they didn't want us to trace it. So we were recovering so much money that at one point I just said, because I was in charge of all the evidence and all the evidence processing, I said, there's no way that I'm going to be responsible for this money. If we found money, we just put it in a bag and we just gave it to the Ground Assault Forces commander. Said, here, I'm not counting this. I don't know how much is in here, and I don't care. This
right.
is yours.
Right.
Because the next thing I know, if I'm counting this, and now I'm off by $5 or $10 because it's 6 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and I've been up since 6 o'clock the morning of the day before.
Right.
Oh, you know, somebody had to steal the money. Must have been one of these guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't need that, and I didn't want that. So I said, I'm not doing that.
Understandable. Understandable. So that it's so many different things going on. You're working for the U.S. government, but you also see that this group that they're backing is not doing the best things at all times either.
No.
You have a lot of violence happening. You have a lot of... How did you compartmentalize all this in your mind to stay focused on the mission?
You know, it's really... It's the only joy and satisfaction I would get is when we actually got positive ID on the target,
mm-hmm.
and when I actually got to interrogate this person that gave me information so that I could move on to the next target. You have to understand, and again, I don't know your background in terms of your military experience, but prior to us arriving there, the Army's challenge was, can we get positive ID? Now, I would get a targeting package, and there's no picture.
Right.
And it's maybe this thick. And it's like it's talking about all these different things, and I'm not going to go into the details of what was in the targeting package, but there's clearly no picture.
Right.
This guy might just be a voice in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to ID who this guy is, and moreover, we don't even know if this is his real name, this is his code name. So
and it's a whole other language. It's a whole other...
Exactly. Right.
So you're...
And I haven't worked this case from the ground up, so I don't even know. I've never even heard this person.
Right.
You know, what he sounds like or what he might look like. So you get out there, that's challenge number one. So that I'm pretty decent at. After mm-hmm. a while, you can kind of figure out, okay, I think it's this guy. I could do by process of elimination, play one against the other and say, do you know this guy? No, I don't know this guy. What do you mean? You live in the same house with this guy. How could you not know this guy?
Right.
You know, you're a filthy liar. Mm-hmm. Then move on to the next guy. Do you know this guy? Oh, yeah, his name is Ali. Oh, okay. So he's Ali. So what's your name? Like that, and it just go on and on until we could find. So once the positive ID was determined, then I would start the interrogation because now I'm talking to the person I need to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Get information, and I would walk out and I would tell Sergeant Dave, who's a big fan of us from the 122 TST in the 4th IG, and I would say, hey, Dave, this guy says he can map track us to the next asshole in his organization.
Right.
Can we roll? And he'd be like, let's go. But prior to that, if they couldn't get positive ID on the person, this is the Army I'm speaking of.
Right.
And I love the Army. I want to be very, very clear.
Oh, yeah.
I love the Army. There's nobody loves the Army or the soldier more than me. Trust me when I say that.
Yeah.
But the hierarchy can't get their head on straight about mm-hmm. anything. And it just they overanalyze things to the point of exhaustion. It's unbelievable.
I'm sure a lot of people in the Army would agree with
well,
you.
Well, I'm being sincere about
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
So now, you know, we're going from we don't have positive ID and we're leaving with our tail between our legs. Like, we have positive ID and I've gone to as many as 4 different targets in one night.
You're doing all this work getting all these people and then there's nothing you can do about it
right.
because right, okay.
Right. And it's at the point where like we're so effective at the site exploitation, the evidence collection, the processing, the handling, that it's like a dream come true. If you're an Army unit and we supported them, we didn't take credit for anything. In other words, if you had a team, you and your partner have the team,
mm-hmm.
The Phoenix team didn't solve your problem. You solved the problem. All we did was process everything
right.
and hand you the report.
Mm-hmm.
And now these guys that thought they were going to be doing route clearance or some other menial jobs, they're now like superstars
yeah.
on the base. Because they're getting tier one and tier two targets
right.
on a regular basis. And it's like, you know, that stuff gets around.
So you really helped close a major gap
oh,
in
yeah.
the whole, right.
And now it went for like, we don't want to talk to these guys. So like, they love us. We're at the barbecues with them. They're at the barbecues with us. I mean, I just went to Sergeant Dave Peluso's retirement party this past February.
That's
he just
awesome.
Got out. That's how close we are. The number two guy that ran the team, who was an SF guy from 5th Group,
mm-hmm.
he's coming to my book signing next week. I mean, we have maintained this bond and relationship. It was very real and very, very loving forever.
Yeah, I
forever.
Thought that was interesting, too. I think a lot of people on my second deployment, I worked very closely with civilians, and I didn't expect that to be a part of my military experience at
right.
all. And I think a lot of people don't realize, especially overseas sometimes, how closely you are working
yeah.
with the contractors and how like
right.
they are a legit part of your unit
right.
and as much part of the mission as the soldiers or the Marines or whoever to your left and your right. But this was a really, really great book. And so Phoenix Team, it's been 10 years now. What made you want to tell the stories from, you know, a decade later? What made you want to sit down and say, I have a story to tell, I need to share it?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I've been wanting to tell the story since probably the first day I got back.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you know about getting published and everything like that, because I clearly didn't know anything. I mean, I'm the village idiot when it comes to the book world and all this other stuff and social media. I just started getting on social media this past August, and my daughter had to help me, and she's
right.
always yelling at me. She's like, Dad, you don't know what the heck you're doing. Stop liking this and stop liking that, you know? So, but I had been knocking on the doors trying to sell this book through my own way. And to make a long story short, I was with somebody for about 2 years who promised me the world that this book is definitely going to get written. And we had met twice, and I had a handshake with this person. And then the next thing you know, I'm getting an email, and he's like, I'm no longer interested in the project. And I'm
yeah.
like, oh, okay, great. So I'm sitting at home. I'll never forget this. And I was like, I can't let this go. So I called Jim DeFelice,
mm-hmm.
who wrote American Sniper and is a super gifted writer. And I get this woman on the phone, and I say, you know, hi, my name's Chris. I want to write this story. And I'm sure one of 1,000 people that call you throughout the course of the day. So she goes, all right, I'll give Jim the message. And I
mm-hmm.
said, oh, okay. And I said, listen, I don't want to be rude, but is Jim really going to get this message? Because,
yeah.
you know, she goes, oh, no, he's definitely going to get the message because I'm his wife, and I'll have him call you back.
Yeah.
So Jim calls me on a Saturday morning around 10 o'clock. We talk about it. He goes, man, it sounds like a great story. He goes, I can't do it. He goes, give me some time, and I'll put you in touch with somebody. And the rest is history. And that's how it all happened. But had it not been for that phone call, I really don't think I'd be sitting here talking to you.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's not a question of like 10 years, okay, now I want to write the book. From the time that happened, the conversation with Jim, to the time I got a contract signed, to the time that a publisher, Chicago Review Press, which is my publisher, to the time I got an agent, Doug Grad, and the two writers, Jerome Priestler and Michael Benson,
mm-hmm.
that whole process took almost 3.5 years.
Right.
So for 7 years, I was knocking hard on the door. And for 3 to 3.5 years, from the time I signed a contract, that's how long it takes to get a book out.
So we have a lot of listeners who are veterans and military. If you have a story to tell, hang in there. Keep pushing. It takes time.
It does take
it
time.
It doesn't just magically happen.
And there's a lot of no's. And I tell you, you know, I think, you know, being in the police department, you know, you're used to rejection. You're used to, you know, not getting your way. Everybody's experienced disappointment in life. But I gotta tell you, it's something I'm really, really proud of. It's something that my kids are really proud of, and my family is very, my wife and family are really proud of. So,
right, yeah, and anyway. They should be. I think it's awesome. Just closing out, because the story was so good, I want to make sure that I really get across that what an adventure this Phoenix team and all that was. Do you have a favorite? A funny memory, a favorite memory, something, a story that when you meet people and you want to explain like a good, like a quick story from Phoenix team that really stands out to you?
Well, one of them is, I've spoken about it before, but it was a police raid that we did. And we had tracked the target. And, you know, this is one of maybe 3 different police stations that we had raided. Every time we went, there was problems. And mm-hmm. the reason why there's problems is because you have people from civil affairs that are running out there trying to spread good wealth and cheer with mm-hmm. these people. And meanwhile, the people that are supposedly the good guys are as dirty as they come. And
right.
they're members of a police department that's being paid for by taxpayer dollars. So in this one particular case, our vehicles were actually down for maintenance. All our MRAPs and RG-33s were down. So we had split teams. One team was already out. So they wanted to action this other target.
Right.
When I say they... The Army was already there, and they were calling for us, but we couldn't leave the base. Mm-hmm. I was at 5 Falcon. We were not going to walk there.
Right.
So we finally, the trucks come back, and the guy who's the team lead is insistent upon doing this. And the guy that's the number two guy, this fellow Adoni, is like, you know, do you really want to do this? We just got over the last, you know, ass whipping from the last police station we did. Which, by the way, each time we did find a bad guy.
Right.
But, you know, the colonel was a little upset because that's his buddy. That's his guy.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, the hurt feelings clause and handing out money and things like that. So we're going to go. And the guy who's running the show, not the number two guy, Adoni, is outruled by the number one guy.
Right.
So we go. And we find this guy. And just as we're rolling up, he tries to pass off his cell phone to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, well, at least we got the guy. So the guy that he passed it, we now took it back from, and we take the guy who did the initial passing.
Right.
And I start to interrogate him. And I'm not really getting anywhere. And I don't have a targeting package. I said, you know what? I'm going to talk to this Iraqi police commander.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you can't talk to him. He's sleeping. I go, well, somebody better wake him up.
Right.
Okay, because I got to talk to him, right?
Yeah.
My right hand to God, the guy walks in the office. I thought I was on camera. He's wearing white cold cream all over his face. And he's like in a smoking, like in a robe. And I'm like.
Like Playboy.
I'm like looking around like, you know, come on. I know we're in Iraq, but this is insane.
Yeah.
Right? So I start talking to him. And I had always made it a practice that I take pictures of everybody I talk to because who did you talk to? Well, he kind of looked like an Iraqi guy, had short hair, and a little bit of you have to have a picture.
Right.
Who did you talk to? So he's adamant that I can't take his picture. I'm like, you don't understand.
He's getting his beauty sleep.
I've got to take your picture. How else am I going to? I said, no one's going to know. No one's ever going to see this picture. So he's angry.
Yeah.
He's really, really angry. And so I'm trying to positively ID this guy. And I'm like, how do you get a hold of him? How do you notify him? He goes, oh, he just shows up. I don't know if he has a car or whatever like that. I'm like, they look at the two Army guys that are in there with me. I go, get out.
Yeah.
Like we're in his office. I close the door. And now I start talking to him more of a New York flavor.
Right.
And I'm like, one thing's for certain. You're either going to give me the information or I'm going to handcuff you and take you with me. And then I'm still going to get the information. So you tell me what you want to do.
Right.
Let me make a phone call. He makes a phone call, and then, of course, we end up getting the positive ID.
Yeah.
But the hue and cry about me taking his picture, they were adamant. Destroy that picture. Get rid of that picture. No one, that will never see the light of day, this picture of this guy.
I'll give you all the bad guys. Just please burn this photo of me in my smoking jacket with my face cream on and my...
and then from that, and we get the right guy. Again, a bad guy working for you, you know, colonels, good friends. The same right. old, I'm sure you've heard very similar stories, if not experienced it directly yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now here comes the jack. What did you do to this guy? He claims you destroyed property, you stole property. I'm like, where are we?
Right.
I didn't. I said I might have spoken to him in a little bit of a, you know, rough language, but I certainly didn't get physical with him. I go, mm-hmm. what is it? You know. So you can't make it up. So that part of the is funny, but it's frustrating at the same time because the word of a guy who's suborning terrorists in his own midst is now has more credibility and weight and standing than yours.
Right, you're walking on eggshells in a war zone, and it's like a difficult.
And if I upset this colonel, now I can't go out.
And I think that's the corruption is something that, especially in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and civil affairs, trying to give money and build up, while at the same time there's all these opposing, seemingly opposing missions going on. And I feel like the conflict that comes from that is a story that's not often told.
Right.
And again, Brooklyn to Baghdad, you tell that story, and it's a story, again, that not a lot of people get to see. So thank you so much, Christopher Strom, Brooklyn to Baghdad. The book is out now?
The book is officially going to be out on the 19th of November.
Okay.
But I've been hearing it from friends of mine and colleagues that if you ordered it through Barnes & Noble, people are starting to get it. I heard it from about three or four different people.
Okay.
But the official release date, like on the shelf in a bookstore, is supposed to be the 19th of November, which is next Tuesday.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for showing that Marines can indeed write. And that we do know how to read. So really appreciate it. A good look for the devil dogs out there. Christopher, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kim.
Yeah, thank you
so much.
Thanks again for Chris for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. That segment was brought to you by our good friends at Tommy John. They're the revolutionary underwear, loungewear, and clothing brand that guarantees a perfect fit that is extra ballsy this holiday season with an unbelievable offer exclusively for our listeners. Right now, you can shop at TommyJohns.com and get the biggest sale of the year before anyone else. 20% off, folks. That's right. 20% off, not just on a onesies or twosies, not just on the underwears or the t-shirts or the loungewears or anything. The entire site, 20% off. Because if you haven't heard us talk about the Dick Turkey Peak, that's the Tommy John difference, my friend. Yeah, your dick will be gobbling as you piss straight with no drippies, no wedgies, and all that stuff is going to be guaranteed. Or you get your money back. Give the gift of comfort this holiday season with a limited edition gift like loungewear and underwear from Tommy John. Plus, save 25% off on the site-wide, all across the store at TommyJohn.com/chaps. That's TommyJohn.com/chaps for 20% off the entire store site-wide. Go get that deal before it expires. Did I tell you guys? I don't think I did on this one. I'm on a brief guy. So Tommy John hooked it up with a bunch of new briefs too. I'm ready to go. Ready to be a brief guy.
Hell yeah.
All right, round number 5. It comes from us from our guy, Chad Garland. Chad Garland works for Stars and Stripes. He's a Marine veteran, too, I believe. Right, Kate?
Yes, he is. He is. And I followed this guy on Twitter. Gosh, I'm going to say like 5 years now. I followed him on Twitter for a long time now. And I just really like the guy. He's just...
Yeah, he seems like a good dude. He's got a huge beard. Like, just an absolute, like, savage of a beard.
I would say he is the Hagrid of our military reporters.
Yeah, very nice fella. Anyway, so he posted a tweet this week that got a little bit of attention. His tweet, the title of it was, "Tell us how you got wounded in combat during the Forever War, Grandpa." And he posted this comment. I guess it's from Facebook that he saw. And the guy says, "Question. So last year I was in Afghanistan. We went on patrol and whatnot. And once we got back to the FOB, we started getting hit with IDF, which is indirect fire. I was currently in the PX at the time, and once I heard the siren, I ran out. On the way out, I rolled my ankle on the step. It was swollen for about 2 weeks. I'm trying to push for a Purple Heart so I can get free vehicle registration. You think it'll get signed?"
One, initially I was like, this is a troll messing with the group, because immediately it got 121 comments and 98 reactions. But if not... And the PX is like the little shopette, like a little store where you can get all the necessities.
It's like a 7-Eleven on base.
Yeah, and they even had them overseas. Like Camp Leatherneck had a big one, actually. It was like pretty huge. It was almost like a small Walmart that you could roam through and get whatever you needed. Family would be like, "Do you need us to send you anything?" And it's like, actually, no. We have this PX here that has like everything I need. So
after I got shot, I got a PlayStation 3 from there.
Oh yeah, you could buy, and nice. You could buy. Yeah. There's like people out front selling like swords, like Bimluk swords and shit. You're like, what?
Swords and fucking carpets,
like, and carpets big, and all sorts of stuff. Yeah,
a big one.
There's all sorts of shit you get. So this person, they're in the PX shopping. The siren goes off that this would happen from time to time, and we're taking indirect fire, which means you need to get to a bunker right away. Everybody just kind of scatters and runs. You know where they all are all around the base. This guy's running, rolls his ankle, wants to know if he can get a Purple Heart for it. I feel like if this is real, fuck this guy. First
there's
of
gotta
all.
Be some sort of shame, man.
Like, yeah.
Like, my God. Like, imagine telling your kids legitimately what happened. And, I mean, yeah, you rolled your ankle or whatever, but trying to get a Purple Heart for that is insane.
It's like, wild. Now, I will say, if you got, like, seriously injured, I mean, you are taking IDF. You are running for cover. If something crazy happened and you were, like, legit fucked up somehow.
Well, if you were legit fucked up, like, that's the thing about a Purple Heart. Now, I know, I will say that there is some stories out there who, for people that deserve one that don't have one. One of my buddies, Cox, he definitely deserves a Purple Heart, but he was never put into for it because his corpsman and the doctor that was in charge of him is a complete idiot. The Purple Heart is the only one besides like a national defense and global war on terrorism medal that is automatic whenever it happens. If you are injured during combat operation, you have to have hazardous duty pay and imminent danger pay have to be authorized. If you are injured in that time period during a conflict, you get the Purple Heart automatically. Like, it's put in by your doctor. It's not put in by a chain of command or anything like that. It's a supervising doctor that puts in the Purple Heart for you.
Yeah, I like to think that even though it's not, like, in this case, like you said, have ye no shame. Like, I would be like, nah. This also made me think, though, I have a couple friends. I had a friend when I was in my unit who had been in a terrible car accident before the Marines. And uh-huh. he had burns on his face and on his neck and his hands, but he was still able to get waivers and join. He was awesome Marine. But he was like, I do feel dumb. People ask me, they think, they're like, wow, like, was this in Iraq or Afghanistan? Like, where did this happen to you? And he's like, well, actually, I kind of California rolled a stop sign back home. And, you know, this is what happened. Like, there's people who have all sorts of injuries who are in that it looks like and that people assume are from war, but that they're not. And just having a couple friends tell me that it's kind of like a, well, ugh.
One of the dog handlers that I worked with when I was deployed, he worked with the Navy SEALs when I was working with reconnaissance. And he got, like, awards for valor and shit like that. Got out soon after our deployment was over. Went to go work in the oil field. There was an accident during the oil field, and he lost his leg. Like, one of the wrenches or something like that crunched down on his leg, and he lost his leg from the knee down.
Holy
shit. And so, like, he went back to the ball the next year, people were like, oh, I thought that you got out. And he's like, yeah, I did. Got out fucking 2 months ago, and then I lost my leg in the oil field. But he
holy
got like
fuck.
He got like $3 million. So
yeah. Mm. Oh, my God. But yeah, there's just all sorts of – I feel like there are people who get wounded at war. And like, I had a friend that fell off a truck, like was just sitting there bullshitting with their buddies and fell backwards and fucked their back up. Like all sorts of wacky things. There's many ways you can get injured at war, and not all of them are combat. But yeah, I just saw this. I saw that it was kind of going viral on a lot of people were commenting on Chad's post about it. But yeah, so just thought that was a fun, wacky thing. Hopefully this guy doesn't get a Purple Heart.
A dude that I was evacuated with, he grabbed the barrel of the M2, like the machine gun, whenever it was going off on the roof. And it was so hot at the time that it like burned through his hand completely, where you could damn near see like his bones and shit in his hands. And they were like, you get the Purple Heart from this. And he tried to deny it. And they were like, that's not something that you could deny. You're getting it.
Yeah, holy shit.
He's like,
shit,
well,
boss.
Now I got to tell people because I fucking tried to change the barrel without a glove on.
Without the mitt. No mitt. But that's that. That's round number five.
What do you think the most embarrassing Purple Heart is? If that's not it, grabbing that barrel.
Probably mine, honestly.
Like, no,
I mean, like, I do make fun of it, like, you shouldn't walk in front of the window, but you do have to do. Like, you don't have time to fucking do everything right. And when rounds are coming through all over the place, eventually you might get intersected by one. I mean, you just never know, like, what's going to happen. Because if you hindsight, you know, honestly, like, that's a good question, Bryn, because there's a long time where I really struggled with having a Purple Heart and getting like the attention from it, because that's how, think about any article that's been like written about me, or when other organizations talk about me, they'll say Purple Heart recipient, Uncle Chaps, or something like that. That's what starts to define you. And in my mind, I replayed the scenario of whenever I was shot hundreds and thousands of times of what I would have done differently. I knew at the time it was a tactical mistake what I was doing, but I tried to get where I could as fast as I could and like get where I was laying rounds downrange too. And you can't do that to yourself. Like, you're in a moment that's scary as shit where you have to make the decision in the moment and you don't have time to draw it up like it's a play and you're in halftime and coming out with the perfect play. You have to react in the moment. And that took me a lot of time in therapy to get through that I made a mistake like that.
I know how you feel. I was at the PX on Leatherneck and I was loading up on Chico sticks when we got the call for IDF siren went off. And I ran outside. I rolled my fucking ankle on the way to the thing. I rolled it so bad. And then I actually tried to get a Purple Heart for it.
Right.
And I've been posting about it in some Facebook groups lately, trying to see if they'll...
3333 7th Ave, still the address? I'll mail you mine.
Yeah, that's the one. So I, you know, I go over in my head, I think if I had tightened up my boots a little tighter, totally the same thing. Equal importance.
Yeah, totally.
Indeed.
All right, let's move on. Save rounds, alibis. We'll start with Cons. Even though he's not here, he fucking tried to send in a save round. Something about axe throwing, how he likes it, something like that.
Yeah, I said, for my save round tomorrow, can someone please read this? And then in quotes he wrote, I did axe throwing last night, which I previously thought was dumb, but I had a lot of fun throwing axes. Thanks. I also really feel like it validated my time for not getting into the Air Force Academy. I felt like such a weak little bitch, but now look at me. I'm throwing axes and hitting the target like a real man. Wow. That's that for the round. Wow, that's nice, Cons. Interesting. That's very nice.
Cool. Yeah. Huh. Very nice. Bren, you got anything?
Yeah, so it's that time of year at Barstool where it's performance review season. So I've got a meeting with Jen Simon.
Pros and cons.
Well, but so, you know, I'm trying to get, you know, bumped up in rank, Lance Corporal Bren. What is the promotion like in the military performance review? How do you go from one rank to another? Like what are those meetings like from a staff sergeant point of view and from like a Lance Corporal point of view?
Well, normally you're just fucked and you just have to wait for time and service, time and grade, and for your there's a point system that you
so like meritorious promotions, which to what I
That's
understand
different.
Are like proactive promotions. How do those go about?
That's like American Idol, where you're up against like five other PFCs and you walk in and so it'd be like me, Chaps, Jen, like there'd be like four of us higher ranks like sitting here, not that we're higher ranks, but like if this was the military, and then you would come through the door and you'd stand in front of us and then we would ask you a series of like military questions. And
like the ASVAB or?
Kind of like the ASVAB.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of, yeah. And we would grade you on your answers, on your bearing, on the way you respond, how confident you are, on
the
all this
look
stuff.
On your face when you get something wrong, like how you act whenever you get something wrong is more important than if you get the question right. Like there's so many different things. Like for my staff NCO board, they take two or three of the top sergeants from each company, and then you go up for a battalion level board, which is like three or four companies at the same time, and then you go against those, and then they pick one person, and then all the different battalions on base get to put their guy or lady against each other, and then there's usually one spot for like the entire base for the staff and CO board. So it's pretty competitive.
It kind of is like an American Idol. That should be
it
a
really
show we
is.
Produce to show that. I got meritorious my first deployment. They just flew out and promoted me meritoriously like my officer did. I didn't have to do that. But my second deployment, I got put on a meritorious board on like a bigger camp. I was like on a Leatherneck and I had to do that where I had to walk in and there was like seven high ranking, like officers in high ranking. I got every single question wrong. Like every single one. I came through the door, I slammed it shut. I'm like, let's go. And I proceeded. And it was like, what flag do we fly on holidays? It was like simple ass questions. And I was like, I do not know at this time, but I will find out. Thank you, sir. Like, I was such a moron and I blew
Garrison
it
flag.
So bad. I did not, I did not get the promotion.
You had all
so.
The answers, but then they turned out to be wrong.
It was exactly like today went, pretty much. So, yeah, it was very embarrassing. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, that's tough. Good question, Brad. Kate, you have any save rounds?
I don't think so. Really cool article in the New York Times right now about how troops celebrate Thanksgiving overseas and about the food and stuff like that. Kind of cool. Check that out if you see it. But other than that, I don't think so.
Yeah, same. I don't think I have anything either. We'll all be back next week for a short. It'll be a short week. We'll only have one episode. It's going to come out on Tuesday. Cons will be back for that. I want to give a special shout out to our guy, Kyle, who's doing social media. Kyle is absolutely crushing it. Good on him. He's been an invaluable addition to our team. Make sure that you give him some shout outs too. He's at I Am The Gun, or Son of a Gun. Son of a Gun on Twitter and all that. Go check out our YouTube page and things like that, and leave some comments on our iTunes. That helps us out in like the standings and rankings and shit like that on iTunes, so go leave some comments on iTunes as well. You can even call Brent a boot-ass bitch that'll never get promoted to Lance Corporal. He wouldn't mind that at all. It's on the retreat.